This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Centers. Back to the line. Stewart. He'll just play it down low. Caught to the front of the net. Score! Off of Nick Petan and in. It's not a pretty one, but Nick Petan has his first NHL goal in his first NHL game.
Dennis Bayak with the call. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey content for you on this Saturday morning. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my colleagues Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Legal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. If we like your tweet, if we like your text, we may even read it on air throughout the course of this morning's program. You can also, of course, stay up to date on the latest Winnipeg Jets news via our website, illegalcurve.com. I say good morning to Ezra. Good morning to David. How are you both doing on this Saturday, the 16th of June?
I'm getting
a little ahead
of
myself. 1 week ahead of the NHL draft, which will, of course, will begin with the first round next Friday, and then rounds 2 through 7 with us here Saturday morning, a special start time next Saturday, 10 a.m., right through the completion of the NHL draft. So you can put that into your calendars, diarize that accordingly.
We're talking about soccer, right?
Yes, we're talking about the Iceland-Australia game that's taking place right now.
Argentina.
Yeah. I have no idea. Thank you for pointing out my foibles when it comes to soccer. That's not my area of expertise.
You've got many foibles.
The question I have for you guys, Hustler's awake, watching this game, according to Twitter. Has he A, not gone to sleep, or B, woken up very early?
I'm more inclined to go with A.
He was off yesterday. He was not on air yesterday, so it's entirely possible that he has not gone to sleep yet and is up for this Iceland-Argentina contest.
I don't think so. I think Huss woke up early for this riveting Argentina-Iceland game. And you know who else is up for this game? The entire town of Gimli. New Iceland.
Yes. I know. Okay.
That game between Portugal and Spain yesterday was fantastic. I was at work.
I was going to say, don't you work?
But I watched the replay.
Ah.
Because there's no hockey on. What else am I going to watch?
Am I a bad person for saying I refuse to watch 1 second of World Cup soccer?
I'm sort of in your boat, Dave. It doesn't do anything for me either.
Since I was a member of the city champion Vince Lee Stings, no big deal.
Was that 35 years ago?
Something like that.
I went to the city finals with the River Heights Cardinals.
Really? Were you written about in the Winnipeg Free Press?
No.
Were you written about in the Winnipeg Free Press?
Not specifically, but the team, yes.
Oh, okay. Dave, I'm with you. Soccer's not my thing. All those who do enjoy it, all the power to you. But
you have to get into the 2018 World Cup, even if you're not really a soccer fan. It's the World Cup, man!
What team would I have? I mean, Canada's not in it. The U.S., which, I mean, ostensibly I have an American wife and my kids are American. Ostensibly I could cheer for the U.S., but they're not in it, and it's pretty hard to cheer for the United States right now in anything except for maybe, you know, deporting the president.
I think you should cheer for Iceland.
Maybe. Iceland would be a fun story. The Vikings fans did steal their clap or whatever they do. I don't know what team I would cheer for.
Heck of a first segment right now.
Well, I mean, what team are you cheering for?
I'm not really cheering for one team. I just love soccer.
You just like the idea of drinking during the middle of the day.
Yeah, pretty much.
And Dave, you're with me, of course, in that it's not our cup of tea, but all the power to those who are into it. There's certainly, we're in the minority, not the majority when it comes
for
to
sure.
that.
Yeah, I get it.
Let's start with Nick Petan. Nick Petan, that's the clip we played off the top of the show earlier today. His agent
cheering for Spain, by the way.
His agent earlier this week had an interesting, or Jason Bell of the Winnipeg Free Press spoke with Nick Petan's agent, Joe Oliver of KO Sports. And while Joe Oliver said a lot of what I'll say the right things in that Nick is happy here, the Jets are on an upward trajectory, I mean, the underlying comments were Nick would like to move to a team that's going to give him more of an NHL opportunity, because right now, with the circumstances the way they are, they don't see that opportunity here in Winnipeg.
Yeah, and
your thoughts on the article, your thoughts on the comments, your thoughts on what this does with Nick Petan and his relationship and maybe even his future with the Winnipeg Jets organization.
Yeah, Drew, I read the article coming from Jason Bell of the Free Press, and Nick Petan did get into some games here for the Jets, but the reality is, guys, with prospects like Kyle Connor and Jack Roslovic now up with the Jets, they're not prospects anymore. You've got Kyle Connor now, kind of a staple of that first line, and you've got Jack Roslovic, who has kind of passed Nick Petan on the depth chart. But, I mean, look, at Nick Petan has played some games for the Jets over the years. You think back a couple of years ago, he played over half of a season with the Jets. He obviously spent the majority of this year with the Moose, guys, and he had a great season. He was a point-a-game player for the Moose. He was one of their best offensive players, right, Dave? So, I mean, Petan is in a situation right now, I think, where he has seen other young players come in and be drafted after him, right? Petan was drafted back in 2013. We were there in New Jersey. He was a second rounder. And now he's seen other players, whether that was in the 2014 draft or in the 2015 draft, and now they're getting more playing time. And I can see why it's frustrating for him, but I think there is always the chance that Nick Petan plays again for the Jets. I just don't necessarily know if it's in a top six role. And the argument has always been, if Nick Petan is really going to be able to succeed, he needs to play with skilled players. So you can't put him on the fourth line and expect him to play a checking role, right, Drew? So, I'm not privy to know if Nick Petan has asked for a trade or anything like that, or if this is just kind of conjecture and his agent is using the media a little bit here, to get his message out. But right now, I mean, starting next year, I would expect him to start the season with the Manitoba Moose. That is, of course, if the Jets don't trade him. But I think right now, if you're Nick Petan, the best thing that you can do is continue to play well at the AHL level and then just wait for your turn to be called up. And even though that might not necessarily be in a top six role, I think he does have a bright future in the NHL. Now, whether that's with the Jets or another team, that remains to be seen, Dave.
Yeah, and I think you hit it on the head, Ez. I think it's a function of he's a type of player who needs to have complementary players to be successful with. So he's not going to go into a fourth-line role and really find any level of success, or really by which we tend to measure players, which is points, right? So, I mean, if you have a player like Nick Petan, who's a skilled player, you want him playing with other skilled players. So is he an asset to be he played well at the AHL level and to his credit had a good attitude. I mean, a lot of players, especially at that age, who are seeing, as you talked about, guys past them on the depth chart, would get frustrated and may have a bad attitude at the AHL. And you know what? I saw him all the time with the Moose, whether it was, after games or during, after practices and stuff like that. And, again, like you said, I'm not privy to the inner workings of what's going on behind the scenes. But from my observations, he was a good teammate and didn't have any bad attitude about being in the AHL. So that was a credit to him because, again, all these guys want to be in the NHL, right? It's nice to be in the AHL, and I always advocate that playing in the AHL isn't a bad thing because it allows you to develop in a space where you're not going to be judged for every little mistake, and you make an error, and the coach isn't going to say, you're done for the game or you're done for the period, it's over for you. He's going to give you a chance to go back out there, rectify what you've done, because it's about learning, it's about teaching. So. To me, it's not a bad thing, but at the same time, there becomes a point where you start to germinate too long, and then at that point, are you really a prospect anymore? Are you no longer, when do you lose that prospect label and you just become another player in the AHL?
Right, and Petan's 23 years old, so it's not like, he's a career AHL or anything like that. I mean, he definitely has the ability, I think, to play at the NHL level, Drew, but you look at that Jets roster for the Western Conference Final. I mean, Andrew Kopp was a healthy scratch for that last game against Vegas, right? I mean, the Jets have a very deep forward core. So it's tough even for a guy like Andrew Kopp, who's kind of fighting, for that fourth line role, that third line role. So that was my point, for Nick Petan. I can understand his frustration. I mean, he wants to be playing in the NHL now. I mean, he's played at the AHL level. He's also played at the NHL level. But I think
the argument, Nick Petan is certainly a darling of the analytics community. And I think their argument for Nick Petan would be that in his time in the NHL, he hasn't been given a quality, he hasn't been given the quality line mates that a guy with his skill set almost would require to maximize his potential. He hasn't played top three, top 6 minutes, and
but hold on a second. You've got Kyle Connor and Nikolai Ehlers, left wingers, ahead of him.
That's my point. Where is that opportunity, barring significant injury to a Winnipeg Jets player? Where is that opportunity coming in the Jets organization? He's not. He has a glass ceiling above him to being a top six player right now, and that's, I think, probably part of the problem that is agencies. That's part of the problem that the Jets have. It's a good problem that you have too many talented players above him, but it's sort of a catch-22 situation in that, you know, you're probably good enough to be, you know, I mean, you probably have the necessary skill set to be an NHL player, but the guys who are above you to be that NHL player have a greater skill set than you have.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, when you're looking at this Jets roster, it's going to be very similar next year. And Paul Stastny is obviously the big pending UFA. He's going to be a it's not going to be pending for very long, but obviously the Jets are hoping that they can bring Paul Stastny back. But when you look at the forward group, most of that forward group is going to be back next year. So I don't think that necessarily, you know, Nick Petan is going to be given a third line role or a fourth line role. I'm not saying that he can't play on the third line or the fourth line, but if everything stays the same, I would expect Nick Petan to start the season in the American Hockey League.
Well, when we way back a couple months ago when the Jets season ended and we sort of went through next year and what we foresee the Jets lines to be or the Jets' usual, the core group of forwards, I don't think any of us had Nick Petan necessarily among that core group of forwards for next season, which speaks to the problem that he had this great point per game year in the AHL, but there's not a direct path to the NHL right now for him unless he forces his way and plays his way onto the team like Jack Roslovic did or like Kyle Connor did when, you know, he started the year at the AHL level. And that's the problem I think that Nick Petan and his representation would say is we want that opportunity. We need that opportunity. That opportunity right now might not be with the Winnipeg Jets. It's worth noting that Petan is a restricted free agent entering July 1st. Now, he's an RFA without any arbitration eligibility, so he doesn't really have any leverage. But it's an interesting sort of subplot to the Jets' offseason as to what happens with Nick Petan. Is he bound again for the Manitoba Moose? Is he bound to be included in any potential trade? Or is he going to, you know, have to force his way to the NHL level?
And, you know, we already talked about it, but Petan is a really skilled player. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I liked that draft pick at the time, 43rd overall, and we talked about it. I mean, with the Manitoba Moose, he was a big part of the power play, Dave. He was a really good offensive producer. But right now, with this Jets group, I mean, this Jets team, guys, is one of the best offensive teams in the league. What were they, third overall in goals for?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that we're saying that Petan isn't a highly skilled player, because he is. Anybody will tell you that. But unfortunately for him, because of all the talent the Jets currently have in their lineup, it's been really hard for him to have a regular role on the Jets. And it's really, I think, circumstances right now for Petan that he's just kind of buried under behind better players.
And the reality is, from his perspective, there's nothing he can do. You know, the agent is doing his job, mm-hmm. putting it out there a little bit. And like Ezzie said, perhaps using the media to a certain degree to get his message out. And maybe, you know, garner a little bit of interest in his client, and perhaps get someone making a phone call to Kevin Cheveldayoff to see what they could pry Nick Petan away from the Jets for. So again, it's not unexpected, and I think Nick Petan's only going to just spend the summer doing what he's been continuing to do, getting better, trying to improve on his game, working harder. You know, maybe getting a little bit. I don't know what they always say bigger, faster, stronger becomes a little bit of a cliche at the end of the season meetings when you say to these guys, what do you need to do over the summer?
Yeah, well,
he's not going to get bigger, but yeah. But the reality is that, you know, like, there's always aspects of your game. We saw it with Connor Hellebuck that you can work on during the summer to take it to the next level, right? So because we see so much of these guys, you make so much money, but you've got to turn it into something, right? So you're hoping to use this as an opportunity. So we'll see what he does with this summer.
Very quickly, before we have to go to break, having seen what you've seen of Nick Petan, Dave, you've seen him significantly at the AHL level. We've seen him at the NHL level with the Jets as well. Do you see him as a top six or a top nine forward in the NHL?
Not with the Jets.
I don't see it with the Jets right now.
Yeah, that's. Yeah.
But if the right situation presents itself, I could see Nick Petan being a third line winger with a less skilled team than the Jets. But right now, with all of the talent that the Jets have, I don't think Nick Petan right now fits into that top nine.
Too much talent is a good problem to have. When we come back, we're going to talk about a team that's got trouble and problems on a whole separate level. That's the Ottawa Senators. We up next, a discussion about the biggest gong show in the NHL. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Practically, the only thing worse than all this would be your franchise moving, which... who knows, down the road for the Senators might become an issue as well. It's just the greatest tire fire that I've seen in almost professional sport. I mean,
it's a tire fire. It's a gong show. It's a, well, a flustercuck. It's all sorts of bad.
What was the last word you just used?
A flustercuck.
I'm unfamiliar with flustercuck.
Well, it's I just switched around a dirty word that you can't say on the radio to say a different word that you, at least hopefully, can say on the radio. Well, I guess we'll find out if I can say it or not later on. But anyways, that's the Ottawa Senators. They're an absolute disaster. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. A good point by Frank via Twitter, who points out that Nick Petan will also be subject to waivers when he signs his new contract. So that's something worth paying attention to as that negotiation gets underway sometime between either now or July 1st or whenever it actually comes to fruition.
You're really hoarding those Timbits over there.
I'm not hoarding them at all.
Especially considering as he bought them.
There you go. Go nuts.
You had them very close to your keyboard.
The Ottawa Senators. I mean, this is a remarkable week for the Ottawa Senators.
Remarkable. Interesting.
I would use another word aside from remarkable.
Okay. I mean remarkably terrible, but I mean, I think you know what I mean, not remarkable in a positive sense. The assistant general manager, they suspended him last night at 6 o'clock, by the way, in case...
I think a better word is probably terrifying.
Terrifying.
In a Friday news dump?
In a Friday 6 p.m. news dump, they suspended their assistant general manager, who's facing criminal charges in Buffalo for harassing a shuttle bus driver. That was the start of it. That was, you know, bad enough, but... And then this news about Erik Karlsson and... his wife and Mike Hoffman and his fiance steps it up to a whole new level of terrible. Where do the Ottawa Senators go from here, and how do they not become the laughingstock of the NHL?
Aren't they already?
How do they dig themselves out of that hole?
First off, we have to say that we don't know...
Allegations.
Right. So
allegedly.
Right off the bat, these are allegations. And I saw the story in the Ottawa Citizen, and it was really puzzling to me. If this is true, I mean, it's absolutely horrible.
It's, yeah.
If any part of this is true, and Melinda Karlsson was cyberbullied or stalked or harassed, especially considering that they lost... their young child. I mean, it's horrible. Whoever was doing this, it's horrible. Yes. If it turns out that it was Mike Hoffman's wife.
Fiance. They're not married.
Pardon me, fiance.
Yeah.
I mean, it's inexcusable. It's just horrible. And I don't know what to believe at this point because it's all allegations. Mike Hoffman and his fiance have come out and they've denied everything.
Mm-hmm.
And they've said that they would also like to help in the investigation and find out who was responsible for all of these tweets and texts and all of this harassment. But I mean, this is really the ugly side of the technological age that we live in with social media and smartphones and all of that. When someone goes through something like this, I've never gone through something like this. I mean, we just had a newborn girl and, you know, for what the Karlsson family has gone through, they don't deserve this.
There's no question that it happened. I mean, it's clear that somebody harassed them. And that's horrendous, of course. To have it be the significant other of a teammate is takes it to a whole new personal level. And, I mean, my question is, we'd heard earlier in the week before this came out that there was no question about it. Mike Hoffman was being traded from Ottawa. We heard that at the trade deadline, that Mike Hoffman was a likely candidate to be traded from the Ottawa Senators. How does the Ottawa Senators organization not step in and rectify this before it gets to this point in time? I refuse to believe that they're completely unaware that their star defenseman, superstar defenseman, and one of their best scoring wingers are at such loggerheads that they thought that they could rectify the situation without one of them being traded. It just seems like inaction by paralysis in Ottawa regarding this situation.
Yeah, I don't know, Drew. I mean, at that point, you know, I mean, there's the innocent until proven guilty, and it, you have to give people a certain amount of leeway. I mean, it's unfortunate, but the problem is with the anonymity of the internet, as touched on, it's very hard to make, you know, a call like that. I mean, think about how significant that is for your organization to make a trade potentially based on, at that point, conjecture. I mean, you don't have anything. It's speculative. So you're going to make a trade which you may not want to do based on something that may or may not be true. It's hard. I mean, it really is hard. And it's a problem with the internet. It's a problem. I mean, not that you're going to change things, but it's unfortunate that people do these types of things. And, you know, and it doesn't really matter the specifics of who did what. The reality is that, you know, it gives people the anonymity emboldens people to act and say things that they would never normally do.
I thought the most telling part of the situation was all the additional wives of current Senators players and former Senators players who defended Melinda Carlson and basically confirmed, not legally.
No, yeah, okay, I get what you're saying, but the problem is that's leaves it open to personality. I mean, maybe they didn't like her. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, if people don't like someone, it's easy to castigate them and to keep them as you know, by themselves. And so maybe she wasn't well-liked. I have no idea. To me, that's immaterial that people jumped on the bandwagon. Because, I mean, again, Melinda Carlson, by all reports, is a very is a fantastic person and very good in the community. So her being well-liked and people throwing support behind her isn't necessarily impugning the
credibility
of Hoffman's
Monica
fiance.
Carrick is her name.
Guys, the worst part of this, it goes back to what I said earlier. If it turns out that Monica Carrick, mm-hmm. who is Mike Hoffman's girlfriend, fiance, if it turns out that this is true, I mean, she's just a horrible person, flat out. I mean, the worst part of this is that, again, I haven't gone through this. I know other people, friends that have gone through miscarriages and all of this.
Sure.
But for the Carlson family to have to now go through all of the harassment and all of
somebody
this, the stalking.
To somebody to take pleasure in the
It makes it even worse.
Pain.
I mean, the Carlson family right now should be relaxing, grieving. I'm not sure if they want to have another child. I wouldn't shock me if they still want to have kids, but they shouldn't have to go through this. And so whoever is responsible for this, and there are a lot of trolls out there.
Sure.
Whoever has been harassing, and I saw that message that was posted, you know, after Erik Karlsson had that Instagram post, and there was a comment made about Melinda Carlson abusing painkillers. I mean, that is just gutless to post something like that. It's horrible. So whether or not it was Monica Carrick, and it turns out that she is guilty, whoever was posting these messages, I mean, that's just...
There's a special place reserved for them.
It's horrible. I mean, it's disgusting.
I think to your earlier question, Drew, as to what the Senators are going to have to do, I mean, they are going to need to do major things, like major changes within the organization, because you can't allow this stuff. I mean, you know what the problem is? It appears as to those of us who are not in the market and aren't paying as close attention as those who are right there, but it just looks like a rudderless ship. And it looks like, to your point, maybe they found out they were late to the game. And we know that obviously stuff goes on that, you know, the coaching staff doesn't get necessarily in the room. So the reality is that sometimes they don't exactly have their finger on the pulse of what's the dynamic between so-and-so and so-and-so. But the fact of the matter is, it just looks, from an outsider's perspective looking in, that the team is just rudderless.
Here's Mike Johnson from TSN 1040 in Vancouver on Thursday talking about the situation.
I just can't. Can you imagine training camp next year if they're both there? Like, there's just no way.
It can't be.
Carlson and Hoffman can be in the same room again. Like, it couldn't happen because it would be too public and too difficult for those two. Plus, every time I went out to dinner with Hoffman, I'm on Team Hoffman. Every time I went to dinner with Carlson, I'm with like it would splinter the room in a heartbeat in like a matter of 2 days. So I don't envy Pierre Dorion because he has to trade one of them, both of them, this summer. And everyone in the league knows that, plus with the looming accusations that are still unfounded out over top of the situation. You know, what does that do as far as trying to make a deal? It's just an awful, terrible, strange story that has come up the last couple of days. And if there's more to it, that is... it's similar. Not surprising at all that Ottawa had trouble last year playing on the ice cohesively.
That's TSN's Mike Johnson on TSN 1040 in Vancouver. When we come back, we're going to be joined by AJ Jakubek of TSN 1200 in Ottawa. More about the week from hell for the Ottawa Senators. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
From our sister station, TSN 1200 in Ottawa, we're pleased to welcome to the program AJ Jakubek. AJ, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, great to be with you.
Our pleasure to have you, AJ. Obviously, brought you on to talk about a week from hell for the Ottawa Senators. And, I mean, without being too glib, it seems like the Gleiberman should have owned the Senators, given how bad this week has been.
Yeah, I think for a lot of Ottawa natives, it's bringing them bad memories, not just of the Gleiberman era, but also the era of Foreign Chan and all the other failed ownership groups that tried to keep football alive in Ottawa, whether it was the Rough Riders or the Renegades. So, unfortunate situation for the Ottawa Senators, and you know, right now, the reality is they are a punchline when it comes to North American professional sports.
Yeah, exactly. A punchline is a good way to describe it. AJ, I mean, the Senators franchise has certainly had its ups and downs over the course of its, I guess, what is it, 25 years of existence now? You know, they've gone through a number of different ownership changes. They've had some, you know, financial difficulties way back when. I mean, I guess you might say they still have them with Eugene Melnyk. Is this the worst week of them all, though?
You know what? I moved here in 2003. I'm from Edmonton originally. So when I moved here, it was September of 2003. And I missed that era in terms of the Rod Brydon era, and, you know, being just basically worrying about missing payroll and all that that went into what happened with the bankruptcy before Eugene Melnyk took over the team. So I have a hard time comparing that era to this era, but I can certainly say in the last 15 years that this is definitely the low point. I think Sens fans have felt a lot of different rock bottom points over the course of the last year, and I think right now they're just bracing for the worst and hoping they've actually hit rock bottom and that it's not going to hit scorched earth points. So it's tough for fans and really hard for people to justify, you know, buying tickets right now. I've talked to a lot of different people in the community and people that certainly have no shortage of money, businesses and whatever, that aren't going to spend a dime as long as Eugene Melnyk is owning the team. It reminds me, speaking of Edmonton, of the 90s under Peter Pocklington, where a good fan base in Edmonton decided, you know what, we're not going to games until this guy is out. And that's what Ottawa is. I mean, Ottawa's a good fan base as well. It's a great hockey town. It's a great hockey town that has split loyalties, because you have to remember, what a lot of people don't remember is, imagine putting a Major League Baseball team in Hartford. in between the two biggest fan bases in baseball, and the Red Sox and the Yankees. And that's what they did here in Ottawa. So it's taken time, and it will take time for the Ottawa Senators to really carve out the number one niche in this market. And I think they've done a pretty good job of that to a certain point. But now, I mean, what we've seen here, you know, it's hard to blame Senators fans for not wanting to put money into this, given the gong show that has existed in particular in the last year.
AJ, how unfortunate is the timing of all of this? You have the draft coming up less than a week from now. You've got free agency coming up. The Ottawa Senators have the fourth overall pick. They have the option to send that pick to the Colorado Avalanche and save it for the 2019 draft, when they could possibly draft Jack Hughes first overall if they end up getting that first overall pick in 2019. But how unfortunate is the timing all of this with all of the work that Pierre Dorion and his staff have to do?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you're referring to just the Hoffman-Carlson incident and then what's happened with Randy Lee. I mean, because the reality is, I mean, those are two incidents, but they're two incidents of many over the course of the last year, whether you're talking about the owner stripping things bare. I mean, there's the staff in the office is closer to 100 than it is zero. I don't know the exact number, but, you know, it's more than 50, down more than 50 from what it was a year ago. You look at the thinnest hockey ops staff in the league. So, you know, while all of this isn't self-inflicted, a lot of it certainly is. And when you strip things as bare as they are, I mean, you're going to have a lack of leadership at the top. And I think a lot of that goes to Eugene Melnyk for, you know, what has happened here. And look, if he doesn't have the wherewithal, it's one thing to say, okay, you know what, I'm the only one that can keep hockey alive here in Ottawa, but there are groups out there that want to buy the Ottawa Senators and keep it in Ottawa and build a downtown rink. You look at the Demaray family, and they're worth billions. You look at the Cirque du Soleil group, and they're worth billions. So if he doesn't have the wherewithal to own a National Hockey League team in today's environment, then, you know, it's up to him to suck it up and sell to the highest bidder, because right now, you know, irreparable damage is being done to this market and to this brand and to this franchise. And if he can't make a go of it here, if it's all about just trying to keep it afloat from his perspective, then it's time to sell, because you've got groups that are willing and able to keep it here, and it's not like you know, keeping it going from his standpoint is basically saving the franchise like he did 15 years ago when he saved it from bankruptcy.
You know, AJ, we've seen here in Winnipeg what two first-round picks can do for a franchise. The Senators have the fourth and the 22nd. What do you think that they're going to do? And just how important is this draft, getting it right, for the Senators franchise moving forward?
Yeah, I think very important, especially in light of the fact that they don't have that pick next year. And that, you know, some people in the media said, well, you can go out and get a first-round pick. Okay, well, fine. Yeah, you can go out and get the 15th pick or the 24th pick or the 30th pick. I don't care if they have five first-round picks next year. If you don't have that pick that you're giving to Colorado, and you're as bad as a lot of people expect the Senators to be, right now they're dead last in terms of Stanley Cup odds at 100-1. So if you finish dead last, you know, that pick is going to be somewhere between 1 and 4. And that for a rebuilding franchise is problematic. So for the 22nd pick, I mean, it's hard for me to say, because there's so many different ways that could go depending on how the draft goes. But for the fourth pick, that's going to be fascinating for me, because there's going to be a lot of different decisions and a lot of options. I think the only thing we know at this stage is that Rasmus Dahlin's going to go number one, and Andre Svechnikov is going to go number two. So beyond that, I mean, what's Montreal going to do at three? Do they go Kotkaniemi, as a lot of people expect, and go for the center out of Finland? Do they go with Pavel Zadina, which I think prior to, certainly post-World Juniors, everyone expected Zadina to be a top three pick. And so if Zadina is there at four, to the Senators go Zadina, or do they go with Brady Tkachuk, or one of the defensemen that is out there, like an Evan Bouchard or a Noel Dobson? So, you know, I think they like Quinn Hughes a lot, too, played for the U.S. at the World Championships and, of course, the World Juniors as well. So there's a lot of different options potentially at four, especially depending on how things play out at three. And I think it's an important pick. And sometimes you have to go, never mind what the ratings say, or never mind what the consensus is. Sometimes if you have a strong belief that a certain player is the best player, even going against Zach Green, then, you know, go with that. I mean, we no better example of that than the Winnipeg Jets. You know, I think back to the 2011 draft and being there in Minneapolis, and Mark Scheifele, a guy that a lot of people expected was to go a few picks later. People said it was maybe a reach at the time for the Winnipeg Jets, and in hindsight, he was certainly the best player amongst that group. If you're Ottawa, if you're the New York Islanders, and you're thinking of Strome, Zibanejad, Couturier, who turned out to be a heck of a player, Dougie Hamilton, and some of the other players that were in that mix, in the end, the guy who was the quote-unquote reach ends up being by far the best player of that group. So that's why I think when you've got a strong scouting staff, and I think Ottawa does, it's not about who the consensus is. It's about who you believe is going to be the best player.
AJ Jakubek, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the Ottawa Senators, the bad week that was, and the lead into the NHL draft starting next Friday in Dallas. AJ, should the NHL step in to offer some sort of assistance to Eugene Melnyk and the Senators organization, given the financial difficulties that the team is allegedly having, and or given the just the circumstances of the week? Is it incumbent on the NHL to offer some assistance to the Senators?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question, and that's something that's certainly been brought up on our radio station, and has even been mentioned in certain media articles as well. So I think, you know, as long as payroll was being met, you know, there were rumors of that maybe some of the staff weren't getting expenses paid, you know, last year, and Eugene Melnyk quashed those rumors at the same press conference that he basically threatened the R-word relocation. So really knows how to endear himself to this market. But I guess as long as payroll was being made, what can the National Hockey League do? So, I mean, they could certainly put some pressure on, but beyond that, the reality is it's still Eugene Melnyk's franchise. So, it's not a good look for the National Hockey League, though, when you've got that, and when you've got disparity in terms of what teams are spending, you know, again, not just payroll. That to me, I don't even care that he's under the cap. That's kind of something that you don't have to spend to the cap anyways to compete, as we saw with the Vegas Golden Knights. But I think the bottom line is when you look at how bare bones they are as a staff, I mean, just think of Pierre Dorion right now and what he's going through. And you would hope in this situation, a guy that is a good hockey guy but has 2 years' experience as a general manager would have a lot of different experienced people to bounce things off of right now. Well, who's he bouncing things off of right now? It used to be a management group of four that included Brian Murray, who passes away, Daniel Alfredson, who leaves the organization for the second time, and I think we have a pretty good idea whether those comments were on or off the record. I think we have a pretty good idea of where he stands when it comes to the Ottawa ownership group. And then you look at Randy Lee and his situation and the legal troubles that he's got right now, and it's you know, now the Senators have suspended him until his legal situation is cleared up. So who is Pierre Dorion? And they haven't, here's the bottom line, they haven't filled those positions. So who's he talking to? Who's he bouncing ideas off of? Is it Guy Boucher, who a year ago, I mean, basically, you know, every move that Pierre Dorion was made was geared towards pleasing his head coach, and now a year later at the press conference, you know, he needed a couple of weeks to basically say, okay, show me what you've got in terms of a plan so that I have faith that you can be the guy going forward. So I don't think he's bouncing things off a guy that's on the hot seat to start next year in Guy Boucher right now. So I just think that that's where this organization is at right now. It's not a good situation. But in the meantime, you know, as far as the National Hockey League is concerned, like I said, unless payroll is being missed or something along those lines happens, then I'm not really sure how much Gary Bettman and the league can do.
AJ, last question for you here. With everything that's transpired over the last year, do you see any chance that Erik Karlsson finishes next year as a member of the Ottawa Senators?
I think anything's possible. If I was the betting man, I'd probably lean towards no. And I don't think, you know, these allegations against Mike Hoffman's fiance help his case for staying here, right? I mean, just from it's a circus, right? So, and the denials coming from Mike Hoffman and his fiance, I mean, it just poses more questions. Like, did they have absolute proof? You know, because from some of the people that I've talked to too, some of the social media bullying is persisted here, even in the last few weeks, in the last few days. So does that mean if it's her, right, is she still doing it? or is it somebody else? Do they have the wrong person? I mean, it certainly poses a lot of questions. Soap opera, I mean, that whole part of it. And you wonder if both of them just need a fresh start somewhere else. And I know for Hoffman, that might be a lot more difficult given these circumstances and these allegations with a lot of teams saying that, you know, they're not sure that they'd welcome him into their dressing room. So I think it's a mess. I want to see how it all plays out. There's all sorts of rumors of ownership change here as well. I mean, I was told yesterday, you know, maybe there is a change within the next 3 months. I mean, there's some people that the rumors are going around here that there's something imminent. I'd be surprised. Eugene Melnyk denied that yesterday to our Ian Mendez. So, but basically, I'm taking a wait-and-see approach with Erik Karlsson. I think, you know, I'd say 75% he's gone. And maybe that's even being optimistic, but with the way things have gone here, I would say expect the unexpected. So I'm as curious to see how this next week and these next few weeks play out from a Senator's perspective, because I think there is going to be a lot of upheaval and a lot of turnover.
AJ Jakubik is with our sister station, TSN 1200 in Ottawa. AJ, thanks for this. Real fortuitous timing with the Red Blacks having a bye week to start the CFL season, no doubt.
Yeah. Looking forward to the start of the season for sure. And, you know, the beauty of this time of year is with the World Cup on and CFL starting, U.S. Open this week, the draft next week. Who says it's a dead time in sports? I'm certainly enjoying the sports on my TV right now.
Thank you, AJ. We'll do it again soon.
You bet. Cheers, guys.
When we come back, we discuss the Max Domi for Alex Galchenyuk trade. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
He just got his pad to the post. Back up top again by the Canadiens. Near circle. Galchenyuk! Timer! And that's two for him. And it's another one-goal game with 22 seconds to go.
Now Goligoski blows it wide.
Mata. Loose puck in front. A chance. They score. They tie it. Max Domi. It's a 2-2 game.
An honest-to-goodness hockey trade late last night on a Friday night in the summer. Max Domi is now a member of the Montreal Canadiens. Alex Galchenyuk goes back to the Arizona Coyotes in the trade. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys, specializing in customization services and branded team apparel. Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. We'll get to your CD selections a little bit later on in the program, Mr.
Did you guys see all of the great CDs they have out there?
Well, no. You obviously don't follow Remus on Instagram. He's been Instagram storing all the various CDs. I guess it's a CD sort of... They're clearing out some of the cabinets of the CDs here at the radio station. That's... What is that? Two Unlimited?
Yeah, Drew, I've got Two Unlimited, Do What's Good For Me.
Okay.
I've got Mariah Carey, Heartbreaker.
Uh-huh. Heartbreaker.
All right.
Little Wilson Phillips here.
Mm.
You Won't See Me Cry. And then this is the best. The Moffats.
Ooh.
I'll Be There For You.
Ah, it was quite the one-hit wonder for the Moffats back in the day. The Galchenyuk for Domi trade, if I can get you back on topic here. I don't know
if you're going to be able to, because I really want to pop in this Moffats disc and get crazy.
No surprise that Galchenyuk got traded. It seems like it had almost become a foregone conclusion that he was going to be dealt out of Montreal. Did Marc Bergevin get enough in a return for Galchenyuk, a guy who only a couple years ago had 30 goals in the NHL? A lot of consternation among the Montreal Canadiens fan base that Bergevin, yet again, has been on the wrong side of a trade with an NHL counterpart.
By the way, how much does...
This is going to be up to
Mark
the Moffitts.
No, it's not about the Moffitts. Marc Bergevin loves those one-for-one trades.
Well, he did it with P.K. Subban and Shea Weber.
Yep.
He did it with Mikhail Sergachev and Jonathan Drouin.
Yep.
And I think both so far on both of those trades, you can say he came out as the loser on them. And so far, there's a lot of fear in Montreal that he's done the same, acquiring Max Domi for Alex Galchenyuk.
Well, when I saw the insiders tweeting about an imminent trade...
Yeah.
I was kind of waiting.
You dropped your newborn child.
No, Ariel is out at the cottage right now.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, I'm going after the show. But
good to know.
When you look at this trade, guys, I mean, for me, it seems a little bit one-sided right now. I think Alex Galchenyuk's the better player. And I like Max Domi. But you mentioned it, Drew. Alex Galchenyuk has scored 30 goals in the NHL. And that was only a couple of years ago. That was his career year. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, this year was not a good year for the Habs, and it wasn't a good year for the Galchenyuk. He still finished top five on the team in scoring.
Still had 51 points.
I mean, exactly.
Which is the second most he's had in his career.
Galchenyuk is a better offensive player. I mean, Ty Domi. Max Domi, four of his nine goals last year were empty netters.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have a good year, but the team was horrible. I mean, so you do have to factor that in. I mean, who was Max Domi playing with there?
I thought you were on line with
Coyotes him. Don't have many good players. I mean, Clayton Keller, I would argue, is probably their best player right now.
Keller. I mean, Ekman Larson on the back end.
And
yeah.
Speaking of Keller, it looks like Alex Galchenyuk and Keller are going to play together on the top line. And, wow, those are two dynamic players right there. So, I mean, the problem that I have with this move is that the Montreal Canadiens need a center.
Mm-hmm.
And Alex Galchenyuk has been complaining for, what, 2 years now, 3 years now that he wants to play center? And if you remember correctly, when Philip Deneau went out with an injury, they didn't move Alex Galchenyuk to center.
Yeah. I mean, Claude Julien gets hired as the Canadiens head coach a couple seasons ago.
Max Domi has played center, by the way, Drew, but he's a natural winger.
He's a winger.
So I wouldn't expect Max Domi to play center for the majority of his time in Montreal.
Yeah. I don't think anybody disputes that Alex Galchenyuk's time in Montreal had come to an end. Circumstances dictated that he needed to be traded.
Galchenyuk and Claude Julien did not get along.
Right.
I mean, that's pretty obvious.
But it reminds me almost of the Taylor Hall-Adam Larson trade in that it's a one-for-one deal, and you have to sit back and say, holy hell, yeah, you needed to trade this guy because you deemed that you needed to trade this guy, be it Taylor Hall or be it Alex Galchenyuk, but that's the best you can do in return? I mean, I like Max Domi. I mean, he's certainly a complimentary piece, but I don't see how this trade improves the Montreal Canadiens in any which way. And is that really all you could get back in exchange for Alex Galchenyuk?
I would like this trade, Drew, a lot more if it was Alex Galchenyuk for Max Domi and Jacob Chychrun.
Yeah. Or even a draft pick. Just straight one-for-one is where they lose out so badly on
Galchenyuk is a third overall pick. Remember back to the 2012 draft? That was the year that Trouba was drafted.
Yeah.
Third overall. There were some scouts that thought he should go second overall. I mean, he's a great player. You talked about it. He scored 19 goals this year on a terrible team. I mean, Galchenyuk, to me, And he's only 24 years old. He's only 1 year older than Max Domi. To me, he's a he'll be scoring 25 or 30 goals for the next 6 or 7 years.
Well, Dave, would it shock you at all if Alex Galchenyuk had a career rejuvenation along the lines that Taylor Hall had this year in New Jersey?
No, absolutely, it wouldn't, because I mean, if you look at what he's going to probably be able to do, it's play his natural position, go to probably be in center in Arizona, which is what he wants, which is what he wanted in Montreal. Claude Julien wasn't prepared to do it. I think I read a report that said he gave him about two periods of an opportunity. Mm-hmm. Didn't like his defensive game, so he stuck, you know, kept him on the wing. And the fact is that clearly this is a new opportunity that he was, you know, that they were looking for. And from a player's perspective, I mean, you got to relish this. And I think, yeah, you're going to want to do everything you can to prove that you are a better player than, you know, maybe that you were made out to be. So it's I would very much expect him to have an excellent season next year in Arizona.
When we come back, Kevin Allen of USA Today joins us. We'll talk about the week that was in the NHL. We'll touch on this trade as well. And still to come on the program, Mark Dumont of TheAthletic.com in Montreal on the Habs, on the upcoming NHL draft, and on the Galchenyuk-Domi trade. Much more to come. Hour number two up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Worth noting, just on the heels of our conversation about the Max Domi, Alex Galchenyuk trade, the Habs have just announced that they've signed Max Domi to a 2-year contract extension. It will pay him $3.15 million per season. At least that's the salary cap hit that they will experience. So Domi signs in Montreal, $3.15 million per season.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Our good friend is Kevin Allen of USA Today. He joins us now to discuss a very interesting, entertaining week that was in the world of the NHL. Kevin, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, good morning.
Kevin, obviously, let's start with the trade that we were just discussing. It happened sort of later in the evening last night, a proverbial Friday evening news dump, but at least this one was entertaining. Max Domi to the Canadiens, Alex Galchenyuk to the Coyotes. Your thoughts on the deal from both perspectives?
Well, it was an old-school trade, to be sure. You know, a one-for-one, nothing else. And when I heard the trade, I kind of wondered whether or not there was something else to it, because you know, it does feel to me that this is, at least in the first blush, a win for the Coyotes. You know, they had a player who, was coming off a poor season that seems to have regressed a little bit and, you know, probably needed a change of venue. And, you know, they got back a guy that I think is, to me, seems to be closer on the verge of having, a breakthrough season. Like, you know, he could have a monstrous season this year with some of the talent that the Coyotes had. So I really like it from the Coyotes' perspective, and I think I'm going to take a wait and see approach. Like Domi, he has a lot of potential, to be sure, I just wonder if they're counting on him playing center. I don't know. To me, that could be not so different than the Jonathan Drouin experiment, where I think they felt like he was going to be able to step in and play center, but it really did not end up being the way they wanted it to be.
Kevin, do you think Marc Bergevin and the Montreal Canadiens have another trade coming? Do you think maybe they are going to try to acquire a top six center? Ryan O'Reilly's name has been mentioned because, as we know, Max Pacioretty, he's been on that TSN trade board for quite some time now.
Yeah, and, there's been a lot of rumors about that, and I like that. I think O'Reilly, I don't understand, to be honest with you, why the Sabres feel like they need to trade him. With Mittelstadt there now and Eichel there, and, you know, they have Ryan O'Reilly. He's, to me, the sort of kind of the perfect two-way center. And, a guy very consistent in his point production, knows how to defend. I think he would be a great acquisition for Montreal, and I think he's the kind of player that they do need. So I like that deal. I wonder about the wisdom, though, of giving up Pacioretty, but, you know, maybe this is a case, again, where a player just needs a change of venue because, You know, I get it that he's coming off an off season, but, you know, he has been a consistent 30-goal scorer prior to last year, and those type of players are very difficult to find. And, you know, as soon as you take him out of the lineup, I think you'll start to be looking for more goals.
You know, Kevin, it feels like a lifetime ago the Washington Capitals were parting with the Stanley Cup, and Alexander Ovechkin is probably somewhere still parting with it. But just how good was the Capitals' celebration post Stanley Cup win, the celebration for raising the profile of the game in the United States?
Well, I mean, I think this is one of the good aspects of social media. I think oftentimes we kind of focus on the bad. A lot of athletes get themselves in trouble by saying something they shouldn't on social media. But in this case, I think, you know, it really allowed the Capitals to sort of take the cup to the people. And I think that's been going on for a while, but I think this was the first year when social media figured out, you know, how to best deal with that. And I talked to Phil Pritchard, the keeper of the cup, the man in the white gloves we always see on television. And he pointed out that, you know, they took the cup to Georgetown on a bus. He was with Alex Ovechkin. And by the time they got off the bus, it was already all over Twitter where they were. Like, people had just instantly did that. And to him, that was such a plus, because it really just sort of highlighted the cup and sort of highlighted the importance of it. And he said that Ovechkin was probably as emotional as any athlete he had ever seen with the cup, but it was very respectful. And he just loved the whole, you know, march that the Capitals put on in the celebration of their championship.
Kevin Allen of USA Today, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Kevin, the Capitals celebration was certainly, as you mentioned, a good part of social media. We saw the bad part of it earlier this week in Ottawa with the allegations being made against Mike Hoffman's fiance and the harassment being felt by Eric and Melinda Carlson. You know, in your time covering the NHL, have you ever seen a story as bizarre and a situation as bizarre as what's playing out in Ottawa this week?
No, absolutely not. And I've had some people say to me, well, you know, there's always stories of, you know, spouses or girlfriends, you know, not getting along within the confines of the team organization. And to me, this is completely different than that. I mean, this is well beyond kind of normal difficulty when you just have people who simply don't get along. And you know, my question will be, you know, where were the senators in all of this? Like, you know, my observation, having covered the league for a long time, is there's nothing that goes on in the dressing room that management doesn't know about. You know, the trainers are in there, and they always know what's going on, and players talk amongst themselves, and the assistant coaches are generally wired into players. I can't believe the Senators didn't know this was going on. And if they did know, you know, why wasn't this brought to ahead, or wasn't there some sort of resolution long before this came out? I mean, you know, we're to the end of the season, and clearly this went on for a lengthy period of time. So I think the Senators will have to answer a lot of questions. And, you know, now the result is regardless of what comes out of this and, you know, who was, whose portrayal is the most accurate, the both players seem to me will have to be traded.
Kevin, moving away from the Ottawa Senators situation, the unfortunate news that came out of Ottawa, and moving towards something that you wrote about earlier this week up on usatoday.com, you had a list of your top five potential UFAs, and obviously the two Johns were at the top of the list, although we expect John Carlson to sign with the Washington Capitals. With Lou Lamoriello now in as president and general manager of the New York Islanders, does that change whether or not you think that John Tavares is going to stay on Long Island?
For sure. You know, Lou Lamoriello, although, you know, the public perception of him is that he's, you know, kind of a curmudgeon or grumpy, and he has a lot of rules that, you know, fly in the face of players being able to sort of do and act the way they want. The truth is, players really love playing for Lou Lamoriello, and I've talked to a number of players through the years who just love how straightforward he is, how honest he is. I remember talking to Zach Parise after he signed the free agent contract in Minnesota, and how he was afraid to sort of tell Lou Lamoriello, and was really shocked to find that Lou completely understood. He said, you know, it's about going home and seeing the family, I get it, and he wished them well. And that's how Lou is. You know, he's just very professional in his dealings, and players appreciate that. And of course, players all know that his history of success in this league and his reputation for building a team, and that's got to have an impact on Tavares. I think as he sort of looks around the landscape. I'm sure, you know, the idea of upheaval in his life to pick up stakes and move again is not all that appealing. I know he likes a lot of the players on the Islanders, so I think he just wanted some evidence that they were going to make some progress in moving forward, and I think the hiring of Lou Lamoriello provides that evidence. So, you know, I don't think it's a slam dunk because, you know, you got to get the contract right, and, you know, he's going to be north of $10 million, at least he should be, and that could take some doing. But I think that if I had to guess, I'd guess that he is going to re-sign on the island.
You know, Kevin, there was a report that Barry Trotz and the Capitals have begun negotiations on a new contract. Do you think there's any chance he doesn't re-sign with the team that he just won the Stanley Cup with?
Well, it's so funny because I think for most of the second half of the season, we were all under the assumption it was a foregone conclusion that he was gone. But it's funny how winning changes everything. And I think, you know, there's been some tension there. You know, they didn't extend his contract. They did extend the contract of the associate coach, Reardon. And, you know, I think some things have to, some wounds have to be salved. But I do believe that he loves, he being Trotz, loves this team. And I think the Capitals sort of appreciate his contributions to this success. So I think it'll get done. And I think that Barry Trotz will become among the highest paid coaches in the league, maybe number three after Babcock and Quenneville.
You know, Kevin, going back to your article about the top 15 potential unrestricted free agents, are you surprised at how many teams are interested in Ilya Kovalchuk right now?
You know, I really am. And, you know, I just say that because, you know, he is in an advanced age. Like, you know, he's not a spring chicken, as my grandmother used to say. And but, you know, I was at the Olympic Games. I watched him play. He could still produce. You know, he was playing very competitively. He was playing hard. And I think he was very sincere about how he wanted to come back and, you know, try to win a Stanley Cup. And he wanted to go to a team that, you know, that has some team success. And I think there's still so many teams looking for scoring that, you know, the chance to get a guy that you're pretty sure can get you 20 to 25. It's just too enticing to pass up. So, you know, there's a number of teams, and I think it's, you know, he's going to have his option, and I think he'll get the three-year deal that he wants.
Kevin Allen of USA Today, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Kevin, last question for you. Oftentimes, you know, fans and people around the game sort of lament the lack of a newsy off season, where they, especially when compared to the NBA, which always seems to be just chaos once their playoffs come to an end. Do you think that this off season has the chance to be more, have more player movement, have more excitement attached to it, or do you think it's just going to be another sort of typical static NHL off season?
Oh, I think this is going to be a very newsy summer because I think, you know, the training of Erik Karlsson will, you know, has to be a part of it. I assume the Senators will make a token effort to get him signed, but I just don't know they're going to be able to get, you know, in the area of the salary. So I think that's going to go on, and I think we could have, you know, other trades as well. You know, you mentioned Pacioretty. You know, he could be dealt. I think the Carolina Hurricanes are going to be very, very, very aggressive, and I think they may be trade two or three veteran players. And so I think we're going to have a summer when it's going to seem like we've turned back the clock to the 1950s. We're going to see a lot of veteran players moves.
Kevin Allen of USA Today is one of our favorites. Thank you, Kevin. We'll do it again real soon.
Always a pleasure.
Take care, Kevin. When we come back, we're going to discuss the contract extension signed by Oliver Ekman-Larsson in Arizona. I guess he's agreed to it. He hasn't officially signed it. He can't do that until after July 1st. That's coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
And I think in our Ekman-Larsson's case, you know, he feels really comfortable in Arizona. You know, I remember they signed his brother to play in Tucson to make him even feel more comfortable. So I feel like he knows he's got sway with the organization. He knew he can get the money he was looking for. And more than anything else, I think he's just really comfortable where he is. And, you know, maybe a guy who's not necessarily looking for the scrutiny of playing in a market where he's going to be counted upon to be the best defenseman on the
Greg Wyshynski of ESPN.com discussing the pending signing by the Arizona Coyotes of Oliver Ekman-Larsson to an 8-year contract extension. They can't officially do so until after July 1st, but by all accounts, it's going to be an 8-year deal worth about $66 million, a salary cap hit of $8.25 million per season.
That's a nice little chunk of change, Drew.
A nice little chunk of change for Oliver Ekman-Larsson. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
I've got some more CDs here.
You have some more CDs. Please let us know. What do you have?
We've got Limp Bizkit, Rollin'.
I can see you listening to Limp Bizkit back in high school.
I could see him listening to him right now.
Yeah. I used to download Limp Bizkit off of Napster for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, we've got Puff Daddy here. I don't know what album this is.
That's
Forever.
Well, that's good that we played a clip of Greg Wyshynski, because in a previous life you once called him P Diddy.
No, P Diddy.
So they've also got
they've got
some soundtracks
Puff
out there.
Daddy, so yeah. As he called him, P Daddy.
Made in Manhattan. Remember that movie with Jennifer Lopez?
I don't.
This is the official soundtrack, Made in Manhattan.
Okay.
Remember she falls in love with, I think, the guy that she's working for? I never saw the movie.
That movie sounds riveting.
These are the good ones here. Remember McMaster and James?
Sure.
Love Wins Every Time.
Are they local?
I believe they were from Winnipeg, yeah.
And then, last but not least, Lisa Loeb and Nine Stories. Do You Sleep?
Do you sleep? You have a newborn.
Less than I used to, for sure.
You used to hibernate, so really anything less than
hibernation. Is it Lisa Loeb or Lisa Loeb?
It's Lisa Loeb.
Yeah.
Come on.
She had that. She always wore the funky glasses. That was her trademark.
Yeah, and she got her songs got stolen by what's his name in Hot Tub.
What was her
Machine?
Big song?
Hot
Stay,
Tub Time
right?
Machine 2. Stay.
Yeah,
and you it, say,
oh God,
God stay. Stop. Talk about Oliver Ekman-Larsson. Do don't, anything other
Ezzy,
than what you were.
Whatever
just
you
doing.
Do, don't stay.
Anything other than that, please talk about Oliver Ekman-Larsson.
By the way, what are they doing with all of those CDs? Is there going to be like a big CD sale?
No, they're free. You can take them.
Oh, really?
They're giving them away.
So you're telling me that I can take the Made in Manhattan soundtrack, McMaster and James, and Lisa Loeb?
And not to mention Limp Bizkit and Puff Daddy, but you might have both of those CDs already.
There is no way that Remus didn't walk out of here with like 300 CDs.
I think he's getting paid in CDs in lieu of a salary this week.
So those are just giveaway CDs?
You are correct.
The only problem is I don't have a CD player to play.
It is 2018. It's going to be hard to find a CD player nowadays.
What is it, a tape machine? Like
an 8-track?
Really? A CD player is that old of a technology?
I don't know.
Taking these to Music Trader.
Do you have a CD player?
I have one in my vehicle.
Really? Still in your car?
Yeah.
I don't think that's a good question. I'd have to check.
I think most of you.
I used to have one in my 2004 Civic, but now I drive a 2014 Sentra.
Someone's doing well.
What about your 2017 minivan with the baby on board sticker?
Naomi drives that.
Can we talk about Oliver Ekman-Larsson now?
We can.
Okay. Are you surprised that he was so eager to re-sign with a Arizona Coyotes team that I think now has a bit of an upward trajectory, but for so many years now has been a bottom feeder in the NHL?
I'm not surprised at all, and it's because, let's be honest, Oliver Ekman-Larsson, I mean, that's the leader of your team. He's going to be named captain because they don't have a captain right now.
That's true, they don't. They do now with Oliver Ekman-Larsson.
He'll be named captain
after
he signs that contract.
Yeah.
And the thing with Oliver Ekman-Larsson, and you know, hockey people, scouts have been saying this for years. I mean, if Oliver Ekman-Larsson is on any other team, I mean, on the Coyotes, he's a 40 to 45 point defenseman. You put him on a better team, he's probably a 55 to 65 point defenseman. He's not maybe a top 10 defenseman, but I would argue that he's probably a top 20 defenseman. Oliver Ekman-Larsson can skate. He's a great defenseman. And he can play in all situations, right, Dave? You can put him out there on the power play. He can play penalty kill. He can play, you know, 22 to 25 minutes a night. He can play even more if you needed him to. But this is an excellent defenseman. He's played his entire career with the Coyotes. He was drafted back in, I believe, 2009. He was a first-round pick, sixth overall. And if the Coyotes don't re-sign Ekman Larson, and you just can't replace him.
Mm-hmm.
And there were rumors that they were going to trade him, and I just didn't understand that because, I mean, if I'm John Chyka, I'm signing him to the max deal, and that's what Ekman Larson is going to get here. You mentioned 8 years, $60-plus million a year. What did you say, $66 million, Drew?
Yeah, $8.25 million on the cap.
Yeah, and, you know,
season.
He deserves that. I mean, I mentioned he's a top-pairing defenseman. He's a bona fide top-pairing defenseman, really talented skater, really good player. And, you know, you mentioned that the Coyotes, it's looking up and up here. And, you know, Jacob Chychrun, he's a good young prospect. Clayton Keller, good young prospect. He's not going to win the Calder Trophy, but he was one of the top rookies in the league this year. The Coyotes are going to have another first-round pick here. So, I mean, Galchenyuk was just acquired for Max Domi.
Mm-hmm.
They've got Dylan Strome in the system. They've got other prospects. So
Nick Merkley.
So, yeah. The Coyotes are going to get better. Now, are they going to be a playoff team next year? Who knows? I probably wouldn't pick them to be a playoff team in the Western Conference, but the reality is
they're a dark horse. This Galchenyuk trade helps them. I mean, you look at the roster, and nobody's talked about just how good of a year. It was a little injury-riddled, but Antti Raanta had great numbers last year for the Coyotes. And you remember he was injured early in the season, and that pretty much derailed the entirety of their chances. But in the latter half of the year, the Coyotes were a lot better than people really, I think, noticed because they were so bad to start the year. I mean, Antti Raanta's numbers, I believe he finished the season with a .930 save percentage and a 2.24 goals against average.
Raanta's a good goalie.
Those are pretty good numbers.
Yeah, and a lot of those wins were garbage wins when they were already out of the playoffs. But your point is well taken, Drew. The Coyotes finished strong.
Yeah.
And you remember a couple of years back when the Jets missed the playoffs, what did they win their last six games of the year, right?
Something like
that. So, I mean, it's hard to say if that translates over from season to season, but the point is that was a positive in an otherwise horrible season, right? That they finished strong, and especially Antti Raanta had a really good finish to the season. By the way, the Coyotes have the fifth overall pick this year. So, I mean, there's a good chance they get a Brady Tkachuk or a Filip Zadina, or maybe they take a defenseman, maybe a guy like Quinn Hughes or Noah Dobson or Evan Bouchard. I would be shocked if the Coyotes trade that pick. Obviously, they would prefer to have the first overall pick and take Rasmus Dahlin, but the point is, at five, Dave, they're going to get a really good player.
Yeah, and they've got three third-round picks, and I think they've got a second-round pick from Minnesota. So I this is one thing that we know about the Arizona Coyotes, is that they're a team that has drafted. They've got a lot of young, nice prospects in their system. And I think what OEL is deciding is that he's comfortable in Arizona, mm-hmm. and he knows that he's going to be the captain of the team. So why would you want to go to the uncertainty? He's going to get paid, and he sees that the team is on the upswing. And I think Raanta was a good acquisition for the team when they did it last year. And I think that you just move forward from that perspective thinking, well, I'm not going to leave the team now after putting up with so much, you know, crap to finally have an opportunity to win and abandon the ship right now. Because it's not like he's not going to get the money. He's getting the money, and he's going to be the captain, and he's got a chance to win. So I think all of those things combined, you know, there's a certain level of commitment you make to the city and to the team, and I think that he's done that. So I think I'm not terribly surprised by it, especially based on some of the moves that Arizona has done to try and make him happy as a player.
As Greg Wyshynski alluded to in the clip we played, you know, they signed his brother, so he's got some familial ties there, everything. Since from January 1st last year to the end of the season, the Coyotes were 18th overall in the NHL, actually tied for 16th, to be perfectly accurate, 20-14-7. So certainly not incredible, but not the embarrassment, not the 29th place
team. Well,
that's
500.
Right, they're a 500 hockey team, I mean, which isn't terrible. I mean, that's a 500.
The only problem is up until then, they were a 400 team.
Right. Because, I mean, you can point a lot to it, the fact that they were without Antti Raanta for a lot period of that to start the year. And that's what really derailed the team.
You could say they were anti-winning.
They were anti-winning, being without Antti Raanta in the lineup. I'm just saying the Coyotes are an interesting team to watch, and certainly an improving team to watch, I think, especially in the Pacific Division. They're not the walkover that they were the last couple of years.
They're most likely going to be better this year. I imagine Dylan Strome is going to play the majority of the season in the NHL.
If he doesn't, you're getting concerned about
right.
his future.
We mentioned some of the other prospects, Nick Merkley. They've also got Lawson Crouse, who they acquired from the Florida Panthers. Tyler Steenbergen, he just finished his WHL career.
Mm-hmm.
He was a standout for Team Canada at the World Juniors. So, I mean, they do have some nice prospects. So, again, I mean, they have a long way to go here because that defense, I mean, after Oliver Ekman-Larsson and after Jacob Chychrun, they probably still could add another top four defenseman.
It's thin. Yeah.
And you know, once you get down in their lineup on the third and fourth lines, they're still a little bit thin, but they're definitely trending in the right direction.
And it's the first time you've been able to say anything about the Coyotes and trending upwards in a long, long time. When we come back, Mark Dumont from TheAthletic.com in Montreal joins us. We'll talk about what has been a very newsworthy last 12 or so hours as it pertains to the Montreal Canadiens. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.